talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I usual.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
We are Movie Geeks. Welcome to We Are Movie Geeks, the podcast. I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Batts.
And this is the podcast version of our website, wearemoviegeeks.com. You know, we don't waste much time here at We Are Movie Geeks, the podcast. We get right down to business. We don't waste time with pleasantries and seeing how we're doing, do we?
Oh, no.
Now, what we like to talk about is what's going on in the world of movies, specifically the box office, because it is now Monday morning, July 20th, and we had a Marvel movie open over the weekend, and you know what happens when Marvel movies open? They tend to dominate. Michelle, what happened?
Disney's Ant-Man from Marvel was number one and did $58 million, followed number two, Minions from Universal. In its second weekend, did $50.2 million. Amy Schumer's Trainwreck from director Judd Apatow did a great $30.2 million at number three. Inside Out dropped to number four, $11.7 million. Jurassic World still in there from Universal, $11.4 million. Terminator Genesis from Paramount Pictures was number six at $5.4
million. Lots of choices there this weekend, wasn't there?
And didn't Mr. Holmes made the top ten, didn't it?
Yeah. And only in about, 330 theaters, 335, something like that?
$2.5 million at number 10.
Yeah. Did you get to see that this weekend?
I did not. Oh, okay. Did you, Michelle?
I did yesterday on Sunday. I did.
I'm going to, but...
I thought it was a treat. What did you
do? I do. Jim and I were discussing the other day how Ian McKellen most likely, hopefully, will see a Oscar nomination.
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh, I hope so.
I haven't even seen it. It seems like the type of role that they like to award.
Oh, yeah. He's prominent in the advertising and the poster and all that.
And he's old and he's never won. And
it's
people like him.
Good.
And he's gay and it's like the year of being gay. So that'll work in his favor.
Well, what is this? The Seth Rogen line from, this is the end. I am a homosexual activist.
It's a great film.
It's a terrific film. It looks great. I saw that they listed New York. Did they shoot maybe the cottage scenes in upstate New York or something? Very interesting. Doubling for England there. Nice flick.
Good. I'm looking forward to seeing that. Ant-Man was number one with 50, he said?
58 million. Is kind of, considering their other two biggies have opened bigger, but for kind of a, for comic book people, he's not totally unknown.
Huge.
He's one of the original Avengers, but it's not their usual 65.
No, in fact, I think it said 12 Marvel movies have opened at number one, and it's actually made the least of those 12.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he's Ant-Man. I mentioned this a little bit in my review. He's never, he never really took off as a lot of the other Marvel characters did, and he was also kind of a joke in some aspects of the media. So I think it's really surprising that it opened at number one.
Yeah,
what a fun movie!
It's a good movie. We've all seen it. Michael Hafner reviewed it for WeAreMovieGeeks.com, and Michael only gave it, 2 out of 5 stars?
Or maybe 1.5 or something?
No, I think he gave it two out of five.
Yeah, I'm surprised he gave it that much after talking to him after the screening. Yeah, I was like, oh my goodness.
But, that's okay. He's not here to defend his negative review.
Yeah, sometimes you're in the same theater with somebody and they see a completely different movie than you.
Or maybe he just woke up on the wrong side of the bed.
What a great score, though.
Terrific score,
Christoph Beck.
I don't know. It was a little lighter in tone. You didn't have, Michael Douglas say in one line? I think the Avengers are busy dropping cities out of the sky.
Oh, that was fabulous.
And you didn't have a bunch of ultra destruction at the end of it.
No.
And it's got a lot of humor in it. Michael Pena is hysterical in it.
Oh, that threesome.
The three wombats. Yes. As Michael Douglas says, as Henry Hank Pym. I think somebody got on to me on the on the.
But Jim came in and did a counter review to Michael's negative review. And you gave it 4.5.
Yeah,
I'd probably give it 3.5 or 4. I thought it was kind of a Marvel movie more aimed at kids. It was kind of Marvel light.
Yeah.
You know, it had Paul Rudd, who's kind of a tricky actor to cast because he's so nice and so fun. Mm-hmm. And he's, you know, riding around in this flying ant that he calls Antony and joking around.
There's
and,
a hashtag now
yeah.
for Antony.
Oh, yeah.
He kind of was trending this weekend. And,
yeah, this movie's a little more kid-friendly, except for the scene with Darren Cross dispatching somebody that says a bad word about his research.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a rough scene.
Turning him into a little blob.
Definitely flushes him.
And definitely, it's great in 3D IMAX.
That really helped. Did you see it in 3D,
No,
Tom?
I did not even see it in 3D.
No, that's
some
that's,
clever scenes that you just...
I can understand, though, to do the subject. But you're right, it's kind of for kids a little bit. Even the Thomas the Train scene, you saw the one shot in the trailer, which was really clever, but then Thomas the Train actually grows to life size, and you know it was a funny visual gag, but it didn't seem quite as serious as some of the other Marvel movies. But I think that's part of the problem with some of the Marvel movies, have gotten so serious and so overstuffed. It was kind of nice to see a little lighter fare from Marvel.
However, it had been interesting to see the Edgar Wright version, who was the original.
Yeah,
it just been interesting to I mean, considering this was Ant-Man Marvel light.
Well, he gets a screen credit.
He does.
Yeah, he gets a lot of screen credits, actually.
Yeah.
And about 3 or 4 times there. But, I had a great time with it. I was never a huge fan of the character, but this was just a lot of fun. They even got his old ex-partner in there. That was nice. And
now, was Pym in the comic book?
Yeah, no, Henry Pym or Hank Pym is the original Ant-Man the early 60s.
That's kind of what I figured.
Yeah.
I kind of got that from the film.
And then when they decided to bring back Ant-Man as a solo character in, I think, Marvel Spotlight or Marvel Premiere.
They called him Scott.
It was Scott Lang, and he was a burglar in that. So that's where they kind of get that. And it's got lots of Easter eggs.
Tell about the Easter eggs, especially the one you caught.
Well, you know, Darren Cross, played by Corey Stoll, is the villain in it. In his opening scene, he's pitching his yellow jacket formula to this group of guys, and he said he's mentioning his old mentor Henry Pym. He says, "We all heard stories about Henry Pym battling the communists. Tales to Astonish."
Yeah,
and that is the name of the comic book in which Henry Pym first appeared in a little horror sci-fi story called Man of the Anthill. And then once he became Ant-Man and Giant Man, he became the superhero lead of the book. And then later on, as Scott Lang joins his buddy Luis at his place, he lives at the Milgram Hotel. And Alan Milgram was an editor, artist, writer at Marvel in the 70s. I think he probably did some work on Ant-Man or was instrumental in bringing Scott Lang's character in. One of the things that didn't hit me right away, and then later, you recall that when Scott Lang first tries out the suit, he ends up landing on top of a taxi cab, and you recall who the driver of the cab
was. It was Saturday Night Live's original cast member.
Yeah, Garrett Morris, who in the March 1979 episode hosted by Margot Kidder, played Ant-Man.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. And the heroes made fun of him. And he said, Dan Aykroyd is the Flash. He said, "What are your powers?" He said, "Well, I talk to the ants and I retain my human strength." And he just points over to John Belushi as the Hulk. He said, "Hey, Hulk, listen, this guy's got the power of a human. You must go to town on those ants."
and Stan Lee makes the usual.
They save it till almost the last minute or two of it, but it's great. Mm-hmm. It gets a great round of applause, at least in the first screening I went to, and the other night when we saw it.
Yep.
And the biggest Easter egg is at the end,
at the credits.
In the final minutes of it, Luis is relating the story. And that's one of the funniest parts of the film when he's telling these stories to Scott Lang.
He does that a couple of times.
Yeah. Well, the second time he does it, he talks about one of his friends, meeting this kind of hot young reporter. And she's contacted by another member of the Marvel Universe who's wanting to get in contact with Ant-Man. She says, "Well, it depends on who you want." He says, "We got a guy who can hop. We got a guy who can jump. We got a guy who can crawl on walls." Guess who that refers to? So who we'll see in the Civil
Avengers.
War. Yeah, yes. Well, we'll see in next May in the next Captain America film, Civil Wars. And, of course, the very end scene, the very, very end of the credit scene.
Which I was all giddy over.
Yeah, we get a middle credit scene like mm-hmm. we did with Ultron. But here, after the last title goes by, something big happens that ties into the next Marvel film, and it's worth staying for you hardcore Marvel fans, mm-hmm. that's for sure. Yeah. And I thought the movie was lots of fun. Actually, I was thinking Corey Stoll, you know, if they'd have gone a different direction, he would have made a really interesting Lex Luthor. He had that sort of menace mm-hmm. with that that you know, interesting, his bald head and all that.
And he's starring on FX The Strain, which I'm like a huge fan of. So it's
he's a good bad guy.
He's probably better than Jesse Eisenberg.
Well, at least we have. Well, hopefully, we'll see him without that wig or whatever he's wearing in that trailer.
Did you guys see that trailer for Everest that they played before?
Yeah,
Ant-Man?
Well, we saw it in 3D, and whoa,
man, that looks amazing. Does that come out in November or something?
Yeah. Give you some
October?
Vertigo there.
Yeah, that especially fantastic. In IMAX 3D. Yeah. It does. Looks incredible.
All right. So, Ant-Man, we all like, except Michael. So.
Yeah,
that's okay.
Well, it's a nice change for a Marvel film. Mm-hmm. You know, it did go, with the character, it went a little smaller, and that's mm-hmm. fine. But I think it's probably the most general audience entertaining, kind of family friendly. Mm-hmm. Everyone would kind of get a kick out of it since the first Iron Man, maybe. Mm-hmm. Though I love the Captain America films.
Sure.
But.
Well, the other movie we all saw, which did really well, as Michelle mentioned, was Trainwreck, starring Amy Schumer. I reviewed it for WeAreMovieGeeks.com. I gave it 3 out of 5. I thought it was a very funny film. I wouldn't get carried away saying it was one of the better films of the year. It was funny, though. To me, though, it just seemed a little insubstantial. It seemed like I was watching, 4 or 5 episodes of some very funny sitcom that women sort of like. I felt like I should have had like a tub of ice cream on my lap while I was watching it. And it was all about sex. A lot of funny jokes about sex, but I think it's sort of easy to write funny jokes about sex. It didn't really have much of a story. But then again, it was a nice debut of this young writer actress Amy Schumer.
Yeah. Well, you might be making it sound a little bit too much like Sex in the City or something like that. It's much better than that.
Yeah. Oh, I've never seen 1 second of Sex in the City. So.
Oh, well, yeah. But I think this is something that if it's a date movie, I think the guys are going to have a great time watching it also.
And they made up a lot of this weekend's audience. I saw it at the Thursday 8 o'clock showing, and yet there were a lot of guys in it. Behind me, like howling more than the women were.
Oh yeah.
So
they're probably dragged there by their spouses.
But we're glad that they were
it's
there.
A much better movie, like Jim said.
Yeah,
And Amy Schumer, she's had her that 2012 comedy special, and mm-hmm. she has her own show, and she's this was a movie that was sold and marketed solely on Amy Schumer's name, which mm-hmm. For a lot of people is an unknown name. But the people who market and track films, they need to maybe start thinking about reevaluating how they market and how they track, because people were surprised that the movie came. Now, granted, it came in third place, but $30.2 million is really good. And after Judd Apatow's last two movies, which were kind of weren't received so well,
40.
This kind of brings him back.
Still, he makes his movies a little too long.
About
10 minutes too long.
Probably about 30 minutes too long. And there was entire scenes they could have cut out.
Exactly.
The intervention scene where they bring in Marv Albert and Chris Everett.
Did the movie come to a screeching halt?
It did.
Or
it was
what?
Terrible. And most of the people in the audience aren't going to know who Marv Albert is. He was a punchline 20 years ago, and I don't know why. Matthew Broderick was there.
Yeah, that was.
He's a buddy of Judd's, I suppose.
I guess, I don't think Amy Schumer has that much of a big screen movie star presence at this point. Maybe she'll work on it, but fortunately she wrote all these great supporting characters, mm-hmm. Which was very very generous.
Oh yeah,
in her writing,
LeBron
so she wasn't at the forefront of every scene, which was good. Yeah, LeBron James, John Cena. Who'd have thought he? I thought he was really good.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he's very, very funny in it. Yeah. And it's like some. There's some Saturday Night Live people on there. Her stand up comedy buddies. A lot of people that have been on her Comedy Central show. And I'd say it's probably my favorite comedy of the year. Yeah. I'd have thrown it another star.
I can see the screenplay maybe getting an Oscar nom.
Yeah, that's possible. Mm-hmm. Cody could do it with Juno. I think she could.
Right.
Amy could do it with this one, depending on what's coming out at the end of the year. I think probably a lot of adaptations coming out towards the end.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't expect it.
So it could. I mean, look what happened with Kristen Wiig and Brideshead. So it's
I didn't think it was nearly as good as Bridesmaids.
It could definitely happen. Yeah. So we'll see.
It could happen.
We'll
Stranger Things have happened.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. What's really good is it proves that whether it's female-driven or women-centered movie, you know, like Spy, like Pitch Perfect 2, you know, it did really well. And so they, like I said before, they need to kind of maybe reevaluate how a movie's going to do over the weekend. So women, you know, oriented films are doing really well. We still have a lot coming out later in the year, not Oscar-worthy or awards-worthy, but we've got Suffragette, which is mainly a women-filled cast. Meryl Streep's Ricky and the Flash. Things that have already opened at some of the festivals. Grandma with Lily Tomlin.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. We've got Sisters. The new trailer for Sisters just
Who's
came out.
Who's in Sisters?
That is Tina Fey and Amy Poehler.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
that comes out in December.
That looks funny, man.
That looks really funny. At the Cannes Film Festival, Cate Blanchett. Rave reviews for Carol.
Yeah, I look forward to Carol.
We just saw the new trailer for Jennifer Lawrence's Joy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, where she's the main star of it. I think this is kind of one of those, the year of the woman, you know, with films. Look at what Charlize Theron did in, you know, one of our favorite movies, Mad Max, Fury Road. She kind of almost becomes.
As long as they're good movies there.
Exactly.
We can't neglect Hot Pursuit, which would have been a lousy movie with two guys.
And there's
in
always.
It,
exactly. You know?
Yeah.
Exactly. And I agree. Right.
I just hope at the Oscars, all the presenters aren't saying, this is the year of the women. Remember they did that in 1990?
Right. Clint
Eastwood got up there and goes, this is the year of the women. I want to dedicate this Oscar to all the whores of big whiskey.
So, we'll eventually. It happens, so...
Yeah, that was a terrible Clint Eastwood imitation, by the way. I apologize.
But, you know, I mean, Spy did so well for Melissa McCarthy, Pitch Perfect 2, and directing from Elizabeth Banks.
Oh, yes, she directed it, yeah. And she's funny in it, too, her little role in it, as the commentator.
Mm-hmm,
So,
I really happy for Amy Schumer and her movie, and, you know, we'll see. Plus, Paul Feig also last week said, not only a couple weeks, he's been kind of really on Twitter with the Ghostbusters movie, we learned who the characters were. So, looking forward to it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're really, he's really going out and selling that, isn't he? And it's not it's a year away at least or so.
Yeah.
I'll be interested to see how Trainwreck does next weekend.
Yeah. I have a feeling it might just drop maybe about, 20 or 30%?
It's going up against Vacation, which is a big comedy that has been
Vacation actually comes out the 29th, I believe, right?
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, it comes out the Wednesday before Friday.
Yeah, they're opening it before to get a couple days ahead of Mission Impossible Rogue Nation.
Okay. So another movie that opens this coming Friday is Southpaw. Michelle and I have not seen it, but Jim luckily caught the screening. Jim, what did you think of Southpaw?
I think Southpaw is a pretty good film. It's a nice dramatic film, kind of a counterpoint to some of these little fluffier summer releases.
Mm-hmm. What's it about?
Well, it's about a boxer. He's the when he starts, he's at the top of his game. He's the light heavyweight champion of the world. I believe his first name is Bobby Hope. And he's in the big match at the start of the film, of course.
Kind of like the Great White Hope.
And he's played by Jake Gyllenhaal. Uh-huh. And his gorgeous wife, I think is Maureen, is played by Rachel McAdams. And what part of the plot is that they both met in sort of the foster care system. They were both part of that. And he's living at the top of the world. You know, he probably bleeds a little too much in his fight, so he's kind of known for that. And it's one of those things when you're watching that opening fight and you're thinking, in real life, would they let it go on for this long? But you give it a little dramatic license. And his manager is played by 50 Cent.
Who?
Curtis
Curtis 50 Cent. Oh, yeah.
50 Cent.
Okay, yeah, I know who you're talking about.
I'm pronouncing it correctly, yes.
Wasn't he in Crash?
Well, no, that was Ludacris.
I get those rappers mixed up.
Yes, yes, but he's very good. He's all decked out in these fancy duds. He's sort of Billy's, or let's say Billy or Bobby Hope, or, well, he's Jake Gyllenhaal's
Mr.
manager.
Hope.
Yes, Mr. Hope. And he's his manager in there.
Bob Hope.
Always, yes, yes. And he said, well, I want to tell you. But it's pretty good. And, of course, it's sort of a riches to rags to trying to get back up sort of story.
Mm-hmm.
Everything just comes crashing down upon him there. He starts hitting the bottle. He just pretty much loses everything, including the little daughter they have, who is just adorable. Anton Fuqua directed it. It's nice and gritty.
How does he direct the fight scenes compared to Martin Scorsese's direction of the fight scenes in Raging Bull?
Well, they certainly aren't as artistically done as the Raging Bull scenes. These are he likes to get the camera right up in next to the fighters. There, you hear what's going on. There's even some POV type of shots where you see the other fighter, throwing punches at you. It's a pretty entertaining film. Jake is good at it. He's a very physical presence. I don't know if the portrayal is that much different than, say, Terry Molloy in On the Waterfront, the Marlon Brando type character.
Mm-hmm.
So he's kind of got that sort of palooka delivery. But, you know, it might get some Oscar love. Who knows? But the nice thing about it, I think we talked that a few weeks ago, this is one of the last scores that James Horner directed.
Yeah.
And he gets a nice tribute when the credits come up at the end.
So you'll be reviewing Southpaw for WeAreMovieGeeks.com this Friday. Well, how many stars are you going to give it?
Oh, let's see. I'm probably going to give it 3.5.
All right. There you go. Another movie that opens this Friday that only Jim has seen is Infinitely Polar Bear. I get clammy just saying the name of that film. But I don't know. Is it any good?
Yeah, the title's getting beyond the precious title there. It's pretty interesting. If you're a Mark Ruffalo fan, it's a must-see. He's pretty much the principal player in this one. It's based on somewhat of a true story. It's written and directed by Maya Forbes, who's mostly been known for comedy over the years. Mm-hmm. And it was about what was going on when she was growing up. Her parents were an interesting couple there. This is the late 60s, early 70s. The bulk of the film is set in the early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Her mother is an African-American woman, black woman there, making her way. And she was sort of the breadwinner because the father, even though he came from a prominent East Coast family, suffered from bipolar, bipolar problems, or
And where's the title come from? Is that a reference to bipolar?
That's what the younger daughter refers to her father's problem. And this is
that it may be because he was white and the rest of his family was black.
No. But that was always Saldana plays mother. I should say that she's gorgeous in these 70s fashions.
Mm-hmm.
And Ruffalo is pretty terrific. He's sort of endearing in it, but at the start of the film you can see him going to the dark places there. He's kind of a scary character. They have to get the police on him and sort of cower and lock the car from him because he's spooky. But he works his way back, and eventually, while his wife goes on to get some more college courses, he's left in charge of the girls, and it goes smoothly most of the time. But he does have his moments. He gets frustrated and he curses quite a bit. But it's an interesting portrayal there. It's not romanticizing his problems. That's the good thing about it. The only thing I had a problem with is his character's a chain smoker, and my gag reflex was starting up about halfway through the movie. It goes through about 6 cartons of Lucky Strikes.
Everybody smoked in the 70s. Come on.
Oh, well, he and his mother are the only ones that do there. You meet Mark Ruffalo's parents, and his father is played by Keir DeLay. So that's kind of an interesting bit of casting.
Choice,
yeah, it is a good
casting.
I like Keir DeLay.
Yeah, so I think that at the end of the year, besides Ian McKellen, who knows, we might hear Mark Ruffalo for Best Actor, because this is one of those roles that the Academy seems to love.
Especially the SAG, the Screen Actors Guild.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, overcoming their personal issues and all that. And they love Mark Ruffalo
out there.
So if you're a fan of his, I would recommend it. And I'm maybe going to give it maybe 3 stars, something like that.
Okay. And another movie we're seeing this week is are they calling it National Lampoon's Vacation, or is it just Vacation?
Just Vacation.
National Lampoon has nothing to do with it.
Oh, yeah. Looks like it earns its R rating from the Red Band trailers I've seen.
That have been pulled. They were trying to show a few.
Now, did they bring back Cousin Eddie? Is Randy Quaid in this movie?
Not according to the production notes.
That's too bad, because really he was the funniest character in Vacation and Christmas Vacation. I wonder why. I wonder if they approached him and hasn't he kind of lost his mind a little bit?
He's a little out there. I don't know. Randy's sending in videos every once in a while, and he's I don't know.
Was
what's
he hiding
on.
Out or something?
Yeah,
he and got in trouble with the IRS.
Yeah,
and,
hiding out, and he was talking about how people were out to get him and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And,
maybe they are bringing him in. They're keeping it secret or something.
Maybe we'll see his offspring since this new film centers on Rusty and with a little appearance by Audrey in it. So
he had the funniest lines in the first one. He goes, here, try some of this ketchup. I made it myself.
Yeah.
I don't know why they call this Hamburger Helper. It tastes fine just by itself. And then who played his daughter in that?
Was Jane Krakowski.
In the first film.
Really?
First
and she goes,
one.
Oh, Daddy's the best French kisser.
But it looks like I'm applauding them for not whipping out and going for a PG-13.
Yeah.
Oh, no. This
R
is.
On this one.
Yeah. The first one is rated R.
First one is rated R.
Yeah.
Imagine a soldier the size of an insect, the ultimate secret weapon.
Ant-Man, like we said, that cleaned up the box office over the weekend, made $58, $59 million, which made us think about Marvel Studios, Marvel comic books, all the Marvel superheroes that we have seen on the big screen over the years. There's been a lot of Marvel movies, of course, and they get a lot of business and a lot of box office, and they're usually a lot of fun. It's hard to believe, though, that the first Marvel movie on the big screen was Howard the Duck.
Yeah, was that back in 86, I think, right?
Yeah, but I mean, they were making the Superman movies in the 70s and 80s. They made the Batman movies, so there was a lot of DC properties being filmed. But why do you think Marvel movies didn't really come around till the 90s? Was there a legal reason?
I don't know. I don't know if they were just not able to get studio interest. That they maybe the studio heads at the time were more familiar with the DC characters. And I should mention that there was a Captain America serial that was in, I think, 12 or 15 chapter installments in 1943 that Republic Pictures put out. Mm-hmm. But even there, there was a lot of differences in that the screen character from the comic book character. He didn't have his shield. He wasn't Steve Rogers. This and that. So in the 60s, so with the original Adam West Batman TV show, and of course there was an Adam West Batman movie. The Marvel characters were pretty much the domain of television. There was a syndicated package, the Marvel superheroes with Cap, Iron Man, Thor, Hulk, and Submariner, and the Fantastic Four and Spider-Man were over at ABC, and no one was making any moves to bring them to live action in either television or films. And Howard the Duck we should mention also it was a George Lucas production,
A very a fairly expensive film.
Yeah, it was one of the big summer releases, as I recall. Howard the Duck really made his splash in the mid-70s, so it took him a while to get to the big screen.
Yeah, but everybody hated Howard the Duck.
The little guy out. in the duck suit.
Yeah.
It's a little odd looking.
The inexpressive duck suit. And then you had Leah Thompson in her negligee. There was a lot of adult humor in the film.
Leah Thompson looked pretty great in that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's become more of a cult kind of.
Oh, yeah. We played it at Webster University
Tim
a couple
Robbins
months ago.
Tim Robbins is in there, right?
Yeah, Tim Robbins.
And Jeffrey Jones is in it. It was one of those huge. It was maybe Lucas's first big dud at the box office, and just didn't take off.
Yeah, but then it was a few more years. I mean, there was a Punisher movie with Dolph Lundgren, but he didn't even have the skull on the front of his shirt.
No.
It didn't really seem like the Punisher. And that went straight to VHS
late
80s.
I believe. Yeah. That was when New World actually bought Marvel, I believe, the New World movie studio. So, yeah, they said they were going to bring the Marvel properties to the screen, and they only came out with The Punisher pretty much.
And Captain America, was that from New World as well?
That was actually from one of the canon. Well, the two canon guys split off, and one of them started 21st Century Entertainment.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's the one with
Red Brown?
J.D. Salinger's son,
Matt Salinger. That's right.
And it's pretty awful. It never was released to theaters here in this country. I don't know. I guess it got a theatrical release overseas, although a lot of theaters had the poster for it. I remember seeing it with the shield and all that. And this was sort of about a year after the Michael Keaton Batman film. And it's a mess. The first part of it is set in World War II. But I'm assuming because they had German investors, they made the Red Skull Italian, for gosh sakes.
Who played him, dear
man? Scott Paulin, who you might recall as the drama coach in Teen Wolf. I believe he was part of the Mercury crew on The Right Stuff. I actually met him soon after that. I saw him walking around Six Flags, and I went up and said hi, and I didn't mention the film. It's probably a good thing I didn't.
But the
makeup is just kind of halfway there. And, you know, for part of it, he's trying to cover the Red Skull up with flesh-colored makeup, and he's got lines like, "Why, Captain America, you are my brother." it's like Chico Marx stuff.
But I think it's probably still miles better than Fantastic Four, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, well, I know that did get a release in Hong Kong or something, and then it started to trickle into this country with bootleg.
I've never seen a copy of it that didn't look terrible.
I've got a pretty lousy resolution copy of it, but boy, it even crystal clear, it wouldn't play very well at the. Yeah. But the end of it, it not being a spoiler, but at the end of it, Reed and Sue Mary, and they're going off in the limo, and they have the window at the roof opened up, and they have, it looks like kind of a cross between one of those
balloons you see at the car lots.
Yeah, where it's Reed's hand sticking out of the top of it. It's
big, a big long rubber hand kind of
swinging back and forth.
Yeah.
And it's just awful. Yeah. I will say, though, that the suit.
Ben Grimm suit.
The Ben Grimm suit, I actually saw that at a comic convention. I was like, that's really done.
And that's the only thing that's well done. I mean, the special effects are almost non-existent in that film.
Well, there's some crude early CGI for when the Human Torch burst fully into flame towards the end of the film, and it's almost like he's doing a takeoff of the Fleischer Brothers animated Superman, where he's trying to hit this ray or stop this ray or something like that. He's kind of resembling kind of smacking into the ray and throwing fireballs at it and all that.
Remember they had a cast reunion here in St. Louis at Contamination. I don't know if anybody was clamoring for a cast reunion of Fantastic Four, but they had one here anyway.
Yeah.
And all four of the Fantastic Four showed up, and the director, and they showed it. They showed, but then they showed like a really crappy, low-res version of the movie that everybody sat around and watched.
They couldn't even find a better
version. It looked terrible there, too.
Yeah, I should mention the villain in that. There's two villains in there. There's a villain that's similar to the comics, the Mole Man, but they call him like the Tinkerer or something like that. And he's in part of it, but the main villain is Dr. Doom, and he's played by, I believe, Stephen Culp, Robert Culp's son.
Oh, yeah.
And the armor is pretty close to the comics, but the movie's nothing pretty much, you know.
Yeah. Well, things started getting a little better for Marvel on the big screen a couple years later when Blade was kind of the first, I wouldn't say big budget, but sort of really good Marvel big screen adaptation. Wesley Snipes played Blade in three films.
Yeah, he was Blade was a supporting character in the Tomb of Dracula comic book. And, it was surprising when they decided to have him as the focus of a feature film.
Yeah, but it was kind of before the vampire craze, really.
Yeah. Well, the one that the Twilight started and all that. But, Wesley was at the top of the box office at the time. It was interesting that he would choose to do something like this.
Yeah.
And it played in theaters here. I think I recall seeing it at the Esquire, and it brought people in. And I think this started to make a little crack in the wall from that was separating Marvel from Hollywood. Because I guess the Blade came. Did the first Blade come out a little before the Keaton Batman?
1998 Blade came out.
The first Blade?
Yeah, that was late
90s. 98. Oh, this was well after the Batman film.
Oh, yeah.
So, this was finally started. That was one thing that always frustrated me being a Marvel fan, is that they weren't making the live action stuff while seemed like every DC character yeah. was. You know, when the Christopher Reeve Superman film came out, I said, oh, now they'll start. No, they didn't. And then when the first Michael Keaton film came out, then finally had to wait like 8 years yeah. after that, you know, or 10 years almost.
Yeah. And then what was the year? What year was the first X-Men
out? 2000.
Mm-hmm. No, the first X-Men was 2000. Okay. Yep. Yeah, and that was really yeah. the first, you know, big oh. screen movie that seemed like a Marvel big screen superhero movie.
Oh, yeah. 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 The characters that had been the biggest sellers for Marvel for at least 20 mm-hmm. years. And this was a good move by, I think, Richard Donner, I think, was one of the producers on it, along with his yep. wife, Richard Donner, who did the first Christopher Reeve Superman film. Mm-hmm. And they did a smart job bringing it to the screen. They appealed, of course, to the comic fans, but it expanded from that and proved it could be an all-around box office mm-hmm. smash.
No, he had some good women in it. Rebecca yeah. Romijn.
Yeah.
She was a sexy actress.
As is Famke Janssen. And,
and Halle Berry.
Halle Berry, yeah.
Of course, they replaced Rebecca Romijn with Jennifer Lawrence, which I can't complain about.
Yeah, well,
later films.
Yeah, I was going to say, they snuck Rebecca Romijn in First Class in a very clever sequence, I thought.
Right.
Yeah.
But so yeah, that was the one that started it pretty much.
Yeah, and then there was a couple of sequels to that, and then there were prequels to that. Spider-Man was really the big one. Wasn't Spider-Man, I could be wrong, wasn't Spider-Man the first movie to break $100 million at the box office the opening weekend?
Yes, yeah.
And that was 2002?
Mm-hmm. This was tied up in the legal... you know, webs for a long time, it seemed like. Mm-hmm. I think Canon had some mm-hmm. interest in doing a version of that, and they had sold the film rights mm-hmm. to studios overseas, and so they had to get through that. And it was a long legal battle, but Sony Pictures finally came out on top, and it certainly paid off mm-hmm. for them there.
But it's like when Spider-Man came out, the superhero movies were... you know, the genre was elevated.
Yeah.
People started looking at it differently. They never in their wildest dreams imagined the opening, you know, that the first
yeah.
weekend.
Yeah.
So from then on, you know, superhero movies were really, you know, brought up.
Yeah, well, they were, I think most folks were used to the Batman films, which mm-hmm. were a lot darker.
Exactly.
And Spider-Man, a lot of it's set in the daytime, and he's a brighter character.
Mm-hmm.
And this sort of was a different take on it.
Yeah,
him.
Sam Raimi did a really great job.
Yeah, he did.
Oh, they picked
the
perfect guy.
Was great.
Yeah.
They did three of the Spider-Man films, and they've mm-hmm. and that was just 13 years ago, but they've rebooted the Spider-Man franchise twice.
Yeah.
In fact, I think Rosemary Harris played Aunt May in the first three.
Yes.
And then they brought in Sally Field. You know, Sally Field doesn't seem quite old. In the comic book, Aunt May was a very elderly woman.
Oh, yeah,
but I just read that they're hiring Marissa Tomei. Could that be possible?
Yes,
Marissa Tomei is my age.
They're talking to her.
Am I getting old?
Oh, I won't say that, but I will say that Marissa Tomei is getting easing into those mature roles.
Okay.
Although I still think she's gorgeous. There,
oh
she
yeah,
has a nice
she's
tan.
Sexy. I hate thinking of Aunt May as being sexy.
Yeah, I remember her in The Wrestler, and
she's
an exotic dancer in that. And there was a scene where these college kids or high school kids were making fun of her. I was like, you know, if I was that age and Marissa Tomei was wanting to dance for me, that'd be great. You know, one of these guys are idiots or mm-hmm. something. You know. But, I think that...
The great news about Spider-Man is now it's being brought back into
it's
Marvel.
It's been rebooted again.
Marvel has it back now.
Yeah.
They're having more of an influence.
Who's this
it.
Young actor they've hired to...
Tom Holland, who we saw in The Impossible with mm-hmm. With Naomi Watts.
Yeah,
very good in that.
Song.
But I'm thinking that the first Sam Raimi Spider-Man film was the first one that had that Marvel logo with the pages flipping.
It did. And that's what caught everyone's eye. I mean, mm-hmm. from the get-go opening credits.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's a great sequence. I love that, yeah.
And then we had Daredevil, and was that 2003, 2004?
Yeah, that was...
Nobody liked Daredevil at the time. I think Ben Affleck seemed to get a lot of the blame for that.
Yeah, and the film is part's a little sluggish there, mm-hmm. and some of it's a little silly. But
Colin Farrell.
Yeah, Colin Farrell's pretty entertaining.
Yeah,
and
Markle Clark Duncan is Kingpin.
Yeah,
I kind of liked it. I thought Affleck was sort of stiff, but now he's playing Batman, and everybody's excited. So,
well, from that new trailer, he looks like a great Batman.
Yeah.
I think
people didn't like Affleck back then for a number of reasons, and now he's won. Well, his he he directed Argo and a couple of other successful films, and he did Gone Girl, and now I think he's got a lot more respect than he did 13 years ago.
That was during the Jennifer Lopez.
Yeah. And Giggly or whatever
and
that movie
of course
was called.
On Giggly. And Daredevil, of course, he met his future wife.
Yeah.
Soon-to-be ex-wife.
But Daredevil's made such a great, the TV show on Netflix has made such a great splash. It's a really, it's
well,
a good show.
Well, they know kind of what not to do from the Netflix show.
Now, speaking of Jennifer Garner, and I mentioned of all these Marvel movies, the only one I hadn't seen was Elektra. But wasn't Elektra sort of a spinoff of Daredevil?
It was the same writers did. Yeah,
but she was in Daredevil, right?
Yeah, she
and
was.
Did she play the character that would become Elektra?
Yeah, yeah, okay. She played Elektra in the first Daredevil, and of course played Elektra in Elektra. And rumor was that she was calling up her old buddies from the Alias TV show and saying, "Don't go to this."
Yeah, it's from Rob Bowman, who directed Reign of Fire. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's based on Frank Miller's.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it didn't, you know, take off the box office. No, so there was going to be no further Elektra films, although they've cast an actress for the Netflix show.
For the Netflix show.
And then they've had some trouble with the Hulk. They've had trouble sort of grasping the concept of the Hulk. The first Hulk was 2003, I think, and it had Eric Bana, and it was directed by Ang Lee, who has won 2 Oscars for directing, a great director, but boy, he kind of botched it. It lasted, I think, almost 2.5 hours, and it was an hour before the Hulk showed up, and then in the first scene where the Hulk shows up, he fights a giant poodle. And I thought, are you kidding me? Is this a spoof? If somebody pulling my leg.
The Gamma Dogs.
Yeah.
That's the one with the Flying Hulk, too.
Well, he's they show him jumping around. He could never fly in the comic books. He could just leap, so he kind of looks like a big bullfrog.
He can leap up into
above
the
atmosphere. Kind of avoided that since then, because it looks kind of silly. That's why, Superman originally leapt, and then the Fleischer brothers in the air, and he said, this kind of looks dopey. Let's just have him fly, and that's why they did that. Yeah. But that has a lot of problems. It gets a little way too arty at the end of it. I still, watching it again a few months ago, I still don't know what happened at the end of the Hulk, so...
You know? I had Jennifer Connelly and Sam Elliott, and
there's
some good people in it.
Sam Elliott's a great General Ross, kind of a great nemesis for Bruce Banner, but just into Connelly.
But they brought the Hulk back about 8 or 9 years later.
Well, with
Edward Norton.
Edward Norton,
who
was supposedly nothing but trouble on the set.
And frankly, I don't think that was any better than the Eric Bana version.
I think it's a little better.
Maybe a little better.
Well, they were more sort of referential. I mean, they even had some, talking about Easter eggs. You know, they have Betty going to get him some clothes, and she brings purple pants. And the thing is, in the comics, I always wore purple pants. Purple and Ed pants. Norton's character looks at it, goes, "No, he's flipping the dial in South America." And comes across an episode of Courtship of Eddie's Father with Bill Bixby. That's a nice little
funny stuff.
And there's a scene even when he's walking around in South America where they play on the soundtrack "The Lonely Man," the theme from the Incredible Hulk TV show.
Yes.
So that's nice.
Speaking of that, I want to go back in time a little bit. You brought up the Incredible Hulk TV show, and we are talking about the big screen Marvel. But wasn't there a couple of made for TV Hulk movies where he fought? Thor and Daredevil, and I'm making that up.
No, you're not. You're not. They did three two-hour TV movies. This was after the show had left the airwaves, after it finished its original runs. I think these came out in 88 or 89 or so. Mm-hmm. The first one was The Return of the Incredible Hulk, and it had Eric Allen Kramer as Thor. Well, how can I pull that out of my head? and that was weird because they had Dr. Donald Blake in it, or Don Blake, who was a former student of David Banner's, and somehow he was able to, he had the hammer, and he was able to hold the hammer and sort of channel Thor and switch places with him.
Yeah, and what about the Daredevil one?
Daredevil one was the Trial of the Incredible Hulk. Okay. That had John Reese Davies, I believe,
from in the Fantastic Four movie, wasn't he?
I think so. He might have been, but he's the kingpin in that one.
Okay.
Rex Smith is a black-clad Daredevil. He's all in a black outfit. Yeah.
Were these both CBS properties still?
No. Well, these were broadcast on NBC. They were still Universal Studios.
Yeah. And then the third was the death of the Incredible Hulk, where they actually killed him off, literally.
Yeah, and they had a character that was kind of like Elektra. Mm-hmm. You know, she was a pseudo-Elektra.
Yeah.
So, those did pretty good on the ratings, I understand.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever seen those. Back to the big screen, though. Fantastic Four opens next month, but this will be actually the third stab at the Fantastic Four in the past decade or so. There was the ones with Jessica Alba is Sue Storm.
Chris Evans.
You know, Jessica Alba, the sort of dark-skinned Latino playing the blonde Sue Storm.
Yeah. Chris Evans is her brother, Johnny Storm.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of those, Jim?
I don't care much for them. There's some moments I kind of enjoy, and I think that the thing outfit that they gave Michael Chiklis is pretty good for the most part, and that the Human Torch effects are good, but they just seem so small in scale. You know, when you read the original comic books, this was Marvel's like premier comic book. They called it the world's greatest comic magazine.
Oh, right.
And the stories were epic, and they would span galaxies. And at the end of the first Fantastic Four film with Ian Gruffudd as Reed Richards and I'm blanking on his name as Dr. Doom. They have a battle with him, and it takes place within like a city block or two, and it needed
to be grander in scale. I mean, it did well at the box office because then they brought it back with Rise of the Silver Surfer. Yeah.
Jillian McMahon was the Dr. Doom in that.
From Nip Tuck.
The Silver Surfer one is maybe a little bit better, but then again, they never show the Silver Surfer's boss, Galactus. He's like a shadow.
Yeah.
You know,
in the comic book, he was like a giant samurai. He kind of reminded me of the giant Majin in those Korean giant monster movies. All right, we got to pick up the pace a little bit. Ghost Rider and Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance. Those are some cheesy Marvel properties, but those are pretty entertaining movies.
Those are from Marvel Studios. So, yeah, I guess
Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
So that'll bring you right up, I guess, to Marvel Studios, will it? With the first Iron Man?
Yeah, they did Spider-Man 3, Fantastic Four, and then Iron Man.
Yeah, which heralded Marvel actually, you know, guiding their properties on the big screen, the first Marvel Studio release, and people thought it was going to flop. I recall the producers of Lost had a running bet that Iron Man was going to not do anywhere close to what Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull did when it opened like a week or two before, and Iron Man just obliterated the summer competition. And the big thing was also that they were saying, well, Marvel Studios, they've lost their biggest property. Spider-Man's with another studio, you know, these others, X-Men, so, you know, but they proved them wrong.
Then I guess the first R-rated movie in the Marvel universe was Punisher Warzone.
Oh.
Who was the name of that tall actor that played it?
Is that Ray Winstone in there?
Something. He was also in the Thor films. He was one of the guards.
Yeah, he's
Ray
he's
Livingstone Volstagg. Or something.
Something like that.
Yeah, a good actor. He was also in Kill the Irishman, where he played a gangster, Cleveland-based gangster. Good actor. I liked Punisher the Warzone a lot.
Now, that's a Marvel movie I've never seen.
Oh, really?
It's
quite violent. I mean, so there's heads being blown off.
Better than the Thomas Jane Punisher.
Much better.
Okay. Yeah, that's Ray Stevenson.
It's Ray Stevenson. Okay. I couldn't think of his name. The Thomas Jane, which we didn't mention, John Travolta was really a pretty terrible villain in that one.
Yeah. His wife was a better villain than him in that film. Laura Herring, I believe, was his wife in that.
Yeah. So Punisher Warzone. And then we got into the first X-Men spinoff, which was Wolverine, which had a brief cameo by Deadpool, as we mentioned.
Yeah. The X-Men Origins Wolverine, I guess, was the full title of that. And that's nothing that I'm keen on. You know, I think I liked its follow-up, The Wolverine, a lot more. It was mostly set in Japan. And that was pretty entertaining.
You know what? I never saw The Wolverine. That's two movies on this list I haven't seen.
That's worth checking out.
And then we got to Thor. I was a little hesitant to accept a Thor movie. Thor seems a little silly with this hammer and his helmet and his long blonde hair. And I go, how is this going to translate to the big screen? They could really screw this up. But they actually did a pretty good job.
Kenneth Branagh did a great job. It was people, a little raised eyebrow that a Shakespearean actor/director would be directing a superhero, type film, especially from Marvel. But, you know, it's a good film.
And I being a reader of the comics, I never thought that they could bring that to the big screen. I thought it all have to be an animated thing because of all the Asgardian lore and the buildings in Asgard and all the monsters and creatures, but they found a way to make it work for two films now.
I thought the first one was much better than the second one. The second one had a lot of goofy humor with Kat Denning. There was like this dumb love story.
Yeah, the second one was more set on Asgard than Earth. Mm-hmm. The first one was a little more set on this planet. But and they used that first Thor to kind of sneak in an Avenger. You know, they snuck in Hawkeye into it. So
they got
the first glimpse of Jeremy
Renner. One of the highlights of that movie, definitely.
Then we had X-Men First Class, which I guess was the first X-Men prequel. That was really good.
Mm-hmm. That was really entertaining. Yeah, I remember I really had I wasn't looking forward to that. I was like, I think they played out the X-Men, and here they found a way to make them entertaining again.
Yeah. And then after that, we had what I think is the best movie on this list is the first Captain America movie, Captain America, the First Avenger.
Well, I'm not going to fight you on that one.
Yeah. You wrote a very long article about the history of Captain America when that first came out.
Oh, he's always been my favorite of the superheroes, just in general. And this was the movie that I was always, as a kid, hoping that they would make.
Yeah, and they did.
Yeah, and pretty much all set in World War II.
Yeah, that's what I liked about it.
Yeah, and it was terrific.
Or many others.
Yeah, yeah. And I had some qualms about Chris Evans in it because I thought his Human Torch was a little obnoxious. Mm-hmm. And here he plays Cap, and he's a terrific Captain America. He plays it with sincerity, and he's very forceful in it. He's terrific. So.
And both going back to Thor and Captain America, those were when Marvel, they were being distributed through Paramount Pictures. Mm-hmm. The recent now Marvel is, Disney bought.
Oh yeah,
bought that out. So. Right.
And of course, then we had the Avengers, which made a mint. I guess that was probably the most successful.
It still is. It's still
the most successful film on the list.
The first Avengers. Yeah, yeah. Well, just the idea of seeing them all together like that, it was just amazing thing.
Everyone said could not be done. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That you could not get a bunch of A-list actors together to be.
Or that you'd shortchange the characters. That's been the problem they've had with the X-Men films, and to a degree that the Star Trek films, that there's so many characters in it.
Oh, yeah.
Some of them won't have anything to do.
Well, I think that was the biggest problem with the second Avengers movie. You already have four superheroes, but then the second Avengers movie, they had to introduce four or five more, and so it just became completely overstuffed. Captain America Civil War. Then there was like a lot of sequels. We had second Wolverine, another Thor, another Captain America, another Spider-Man, another X-Men. And then that brings us up to last year's Guardians of the Galaxy, which I believe was the top grossing movie of last year. Or did American Sniper beat it eventually?
I think Sniper.
And maybe the Hunger Games sequel, too? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it was one of the top three money-making movies of last year. And that one sort of came out of left field. Nobody was familiar with that property.
Yeah.
James Gunn from St. Louis directed it. He wasn't known for directing anything with a budget. And he did a great job. He had a funny script, and people loved it.
Yeah, yeah. Gunn is working on the second one, and it does have a connection, even though it's set, as it says, in the galaxy far away. It does have a connection with the Marvel Universe here on Earth, and they're going to bring those guys in pretty soon, and it's going to be pretty amazing.
And it was nominated for Best Makeup.
Yeah, I think it got two nominations.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then we've already talked about Ant-Man, and that opened over the weekend, and we all like that. Fantastic Four opens next month. We've got Deadpool coming up, another Captain America coming up, another X-Men coming up, Gambit, Doctor Strange. Let's talk about that real briefly. That's Benedict Cumberbatch?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Now, there was a Doctor Strange TV movie in the 70s.
Peter Hooten?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Phil DeGuard, I believe, directed it. And that was when a lot of the Marvel characters were sort of purchased by CBS Universal. And from that, we got the two Captain America TV movies, the Doctor Strange and the Incredible Hulk series. Yeah. But,
Benedict and Tilda Swinton plays...
The Ancient One?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. But is that a female in the comic book?
No.
I didn't think so.
Yeah, yeah.
Scott Derrickson is directing it.
I was about to call him Eric. It's Scott
Dickerson. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Derrickson, yes, yes. I'm looking forward to that. That could be fun.
There will be Marvel movies made as long as we are living and long after that,
apparently. They've already announced them all the way into, 2020?
Yeah. I've got on this list, I've got... Hulk.
Captain Marvel is going to be out in 2019, 2018. It'll be the
Thor Ragnarok.
Yep.
Black Panther, Inhumans, Avengers, Infinity War Part 2, yeah, et cetera,
Captain
et cetera,
Marvel
et cetera.
Will be the 20th Marvel movie, and it's going to be, there's been 8 different Captain Marvels. This time it's going to be a woman, so it'll be Miss Marvel, Carol Danvers.
Neat. And Black Panther will be in Civil War. He'll have first appearance in that.
Things to look forward to, and I guess the next Marvel movie we'll be reviewing will be Fantastic Four. We'll probably be reviewing that in a couple of weeks. We'll be back next week with reviews of Pixels and Paper Towns and the new Vacation and all kinds of stuff. But we've got to wrap it up for now. I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Batts.
And be sure to listen again next week for the podcast of We Are Movie Geeks.
Black leather, rock, rock, rock. Black leather, ta-ta-ta. Black leather, black leather. Oh, nutty steak. Hello, darling.
Hey, 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 hey.
Black leather, rock, rock, rock. Black leather, ta-ta-ta. Black leather, hip, hip, hip. I got that feeling. Black leather, rock.